Good afternoon. The Senate Judiciary Committee meeting is called to order. Today is Friday, April 23rd, 2021. Time is 1:33. We're meeting in State Capitol Room number 205. We have a full house today. Those in attendance are Senator Schauer, Senator Keel, Senator Hughes, Senator Myers, and myself, Senator Holland, Chair. We do have a quorum to conduct business. And if I'm correct, we have Marissa is our moderator for today, and Nancy is our recording secretary. As a reminder, please silence your cell phones. First up today, we will bring back Senate Bill 82 back before the committee. Senate Bill 82 is related to election investigations. The bill was previously heard on April 12th. Let's see. I have on here a brief of these. Back on the record. I do see that we will offer the administration opportunity to make some remarks, and I believe it's going to be Deputy Attorney General Corey Mills. If you can hear me, please state your name and put yourself on the record and begin your remarks.
Thank you, Chair Holland and other members of the Senate Judiciary Committee. For the record, this is Corey Mills, Deputy Attorney General for the Civil Division at the Department of Law. And we just want to say that we're happy to have brought this again before the committee, and I believe we're going to consider some amendments today, and we'd be happy to provide our input on those as you go through the process and answer any questions you might have. Other than that, I will give it back to the committee so you can continue with your deliberations.
Thank you so much. Please note that I will be extending the amendment deadline until Monday at 11 a.m. We still have a few more amendments outstanding, but we're going to hear the amendments already received. And along those lines, we're going to go a little out of order. First up is amendment number 5 by, I'm sorry about that, I should have warned you about that. First up will be amendment number 5 by Senator Hughes, and there's a reason for taking these out of order like this. Senator Hughes.
Mr. Chair, I move amendment number 5.
So I will object for discussion. Senator Hughes, please explain the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The intent of this amendment is to do 4 things. Give individuals better opportunities, that is, more time to file complaints with the Division of Elections. So on page 1, line 7, it changes 30 days from the election to 60 days from the certification of the election, which would essentially be 90 days from the election. Secondly, it requires information sharing between the agencies and the Attorney General. So on page 2, line 9, allows for the Attorney General's office to obtain relevant records and information from a state agency in order to expedite their ability to carry out the investigation. Thirdly, it clarifies terms, and this was a suggestion from Nancy Mead on behalf of the court, was changing the word civil penalty to the word fine, and that more accurately describes the penalty imposed by a court. A fine, as you know, would be a sum of money imposed by the court, whereas a penalty may not involve court proceedings. Fourthly, the amendment explains exactly how the Attorney General would have the ability to investigate and provide a robust and fast way to ensure compliance by giving the Division of Elections and the Attorney General the tools to identify and prevent violations of election law before those violations affect the outcome of elections. The proposed language provides more detail on how the Attorney General's office would investigate and ensure compliance with an investigation. It also provides more of a balance for both sides, giving the Attorney General the right to subpoena and giving the recipient the right to challenge. And with that, I can try to answer questions. And I don't know if my staff would want to come forward. She could come forward. We also, the Department of Law is available to respond. We worked with them on this amendment, and so they're quite familiar with it.
Well, staff may get in position if they care to, but we'll also make this opportunity for representative from the courts if they wish to comment on amendment number 5.
Corey, address it to Corey?
Brief at ease. Back on the record, Senate Judiciary Committee. So Deputy Attorney General Mills, if you would care to speak on this at first, are you familiar with Amendment Number 5?
Chair Holland, yes. Again, Corey Mills for the record, Deputy Attorney General. Yes, and we did work with Senator Hughes on this amendment and appreciate her bringing this forward. We are supportive of this amendment. We think it provides some clarity around how long a complaint could be brought, and adding the 60 days and clarification that it's from certification of the election, not necessarily election day. And it provides some clarity and more robust process in terms of the subpoena and ensuring that we can do that on an expedited basis in those cases where we really feel it's necessary depending on the timelines we're coming up against. And as Senator Hughes also pointed out, we did receive comment from the court system, and we're happy to ensure that our language fits how the courts actually impose these fines. And we would appreciate it if the committee passed this amendment.
And along those lines, General Counsel Nancy Mead, if you're online, if you'd care to state your name, put yourself on the record, and make any comments on this.
Thank you, Chair Holland. This is Nancy Mead, General Counsel for the Alaska Court System, and as Ms. Mills expressed, I have seen the amendment and made some suggestions or provided some input for the Department of Law, and I very much appreciate their willingness to work with me on some of these changes. This is a perfectly acceptable policy for the legislature to pass. I would point out a couple of things that are a little bit unusual. And that would be in this amendment on page 2, lines, it's subsection E, so I'm looking basically at lines 24 through 28. This has to do with the Department of Law's investigatory power and their issuance of subpoenas or subpoenas due case take-em or interrogatories. And this on line 22 does authorize the Attorney General to file an ex parte petition to have the court require a shorter time frame for the respondent to provide their answer or response. And the judge would need to find probable cause that a violation of the election fraud provision has been committed or is being committed. So this is a little bit like a civil search warrant. Judges can do this. They do this for crimes and try to determine if there's probable cause to believe that something untoward has happened. This is civil and not a crime, so it's a little bit of a strange procedure, but I believe it's something that the court is equipped just fine to deal with. Subsection F, which begins at the bottom of that page and goes on to the top of page 3, provides for also a little bit of a different sort of process, and that is when the person who's the target or respondent gets a subpoena from the Department of Law to respond to something with respect to this election investigation, they can just start an action in Superior Court to have that quashed. This is quite unusual. We would need to develop forms or some sort of procedures to allow a civil action that just begins with a petition or something to quash a subpoena. Subpoenas and interrogatories are, in every other instance in the law, issued in the middle of an ongoing action. So there would be a civil case already where you try to subpoena somebody. So this is unusual, but again, I think we can deal with it. The law says on page 3 and 4 that, or lines 3 and 4, that an action brought shall be considered on an expedited basis again, is a very unusual thing. Usually, if something needs to be expedited, the person will file something saying, here's my petition, and along with it, a motion to have it considered on an expedited basis. So to have that in statute is something that is not very common at all, would be something that the court, you know, when we get something like this, would have to sort of drop everything and deal with. If that's the legislature's policy, that's how the court should deal with this, we can do so. The next line is also a little bit concerning, or something you might want to look at. Line 5 says that the court can hear from the attorney general in an ex parte setting. Ex parte, as you know, means that the other person would not be present to provide any evidence and arguments. So the court would set a hearing and the attorney general would come in and speak, but the person who filed the action would not have a right to be there and present anything on their own behalf. Ex parte proceedings are disfavored in the law because they don't provide due process to the party who is unable to be present. Again, if the legislature wants those to be ex parte, the court can and will follow that law, but I would just point out that you are thereby saying that the other person does not have the due process right to be heard. But those are the only thoughts I have about this amendment.
Thank you, Ms. Mead. And so, Senator Hughes, I see you have Lisa, your staff queued up. Lisa, did you have some comments at this time?
Thank you, Chair Hall, and Lisa Hart. For the record, Lisa Hart, staff to Senator Hughes. I have no points to make at this point in time. If there's anything I can do to be helpful, I'm certainly here to do that.
We've heard a lot of testimony. Are there any questions from the committee at this time? Senator Hughes?
Yeah, I would like to hear the Department of Law's response to the last concern. It seemed like some of the other things were fairly workable. But one of the things that, you know, this is an investigative process here that we're authorizing. And just as an individual citizen can make a complaint and file a complaint, I guess I would see this, and maybe I'm wrong here, but the attorney general basically would have a right to push a complaint just as any other citizen would. And so that's where I don't really see the problem. And this isn't really a hearing where a decision's being made at this point. This is just to gather evidence. Well, maybe I'm wrong on that. I'll let the Department of Law speak to that. Thank you.
And would that be Ms. Mills? Are you prepared to speak on that?
Yes, Chair Holland, thank you. Through the chair to Senator Hughes. I think, Senator Hughes, you got it right on. We're just looking for ways in which to quickly be able to gather the evidence we need to substantiate whether a complaint has actually alleged a violation, whether a violation has occurred. If you notice, we understand Nancy's points, the court system's points, that this is not something you see very often, but we also felt like in the elections context, things often have to move quickly. We have very strict deadlines that the division has to meet. We're not sure that the expedited nature will be required every time, but we do think it's an important option, and we want to keep the investigation moving. The part about ex parte setting, if you notice that language on lines, I believe it's 4 and 5, it does say the court may hear evidence, so we are not requiring the court to hear evidence and receive argument. The reason we want to leave that option open and include it in the statute as an option for the court to consider is that we are in the middle of an investigation. So there may be evidence showing why we need to pursue the subpoena or gather more information because of evidence we've already gathered, but that shouldn't be public at that point. and that a subject of a complaint or someone, even a third party, we don't want to disclose to them the investigation we're doing. One, we don't want to tarnish the reputation of someone, you know, before our investigation is complete, and we want to make sure our investigation isn't hindered. So there may be circumstances in which an ex parte hearing to just hear some of that background evidence is important. I would also, Assistant Attorney General John Haley is on the line. He currently does our consumer protection investigations and helps that unit and works with our investigators. So if there are more specific questions on the process or how those subpoenas work and how we envision this statute working, I would also recommend you have him speak.
Thank you. With that answer, Senator Keel, you had express an interest in a question or comment?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was interested in the ex parte piece as well. Most of this amendment I really like. I think the emphasis on the permissive language, that it's possible for a judge to agree to an to hear things ex parte, gives me a modicum of comfort. May want to think more on that moving forward, but I think I'm good.
Thank you, Senator Keel. Are there any other questions or comments from the committee? Senator Hughes, I will remove my objection.
I was hoping you'd do that, Mr. Chair.
And do you have any comments on this?
No, I'm curious whether there's any further objection.
Is there any further objection to this bill? I mean, this amendment? Pardon me? Seeing none. Brief at ease. All right, Senate Judiciary Committee, back on the record. So yes, amendment number five is adopted. Next up will be amendment number one by Senator Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move amendment number one, which is A.1.
I will object for discussion. Senator Keel, please explain the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This amendment directs complaints straight to the Attorney General's office instead of the Division of Elections as the starting point. I think our conversation so far and our future conversations are going to illustrate that we are primarily going to be talking about legal issues and implicating the Department of Law's investigation function here that this bill creates. So it makes the most sense, really, to start it with the Department of Law. It also avoids a little bit, I guess, the potential appearance of impropriety. Some of these complaints that come in will be against Division of Elections staff and workers, and it looks a little funny for the Division of Elections to be the first step on saying, oh, no, we did just fine. So if there's a dismissal at the beginning, I think to have that come from the Attorney General's office is a little bit of an outside look.
Senator Hughes?
Yes. This one isn't a deal breaker for me, but the thing I'm concerned about is the volume that may land in the lap of the Department of Law. And that may be a problem, and we might want to see if they think it would increase their fiscal load. I think they think initially it might not, but over time it might and require additional staff. The other thing I want to remind the sponsor is the fact that the person who brings it to the Division of Elections, and they provide, you know, somewhat of a filter that where it actually could be resolved, they could learn information that they therefore see they don't need the complaint going forward, et cetera. But it also allows the person filing the complaint, if they don't like the answer from Division of Elections, I mean, the bill allows that person to say, okay, I'm going to the AG. So I'm just concerned about the volume that it might go to the Department of Law, and I would just want to remind the maker, the sponsor, that the person can still go to the AG and express a little concern about a future fiscal note that might result from this, and just hear what the sponsor might say.
Senator Keel, do you have any comment?
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm happy to hear from the department about their thoughts on the volumes. I suspect that the volumes will be roughly the same no matter which agency handles them first.
All right, we can go. Ms. Mills, do you have any comments on amendment number one?
Again, Chair Holland, thank you for the opportunity to respond. With this amendment, I understand what Senator Keel is saying in terms of the volume may be the same between both, but the reality is right now that the division already receives complaints, actually a pretty steady flow. So the Department of Law having to then take all of that on, plus any additional that come because we passed this and people think that it's a new avenue. We really would have to think about the fiscal impact. Those calls, like in our consumer protection arena, come in to staff that is assigned to kind of take those in, make sure they log them correctly. So it does create additional work, and I don't know that we have existing staff to do that, versus we were thinking that the division would be able to be the filter. People already go to the division. They already file complaints, whether it be by phone call or email or other avenues. And so then we would only be getting what really needs to be investigated. So we weren't thinking of that intake responsibility. So I guess I'd say, you know, I don't think we have too strong a position on this, but we would need to look at our staffing and see what was needed.
Senator Myers.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. What I look at here with this amendment is an issue of expertise more than anything else, because as we've seen, the Department of Law is asking for two new positions in order to be able to handle some of this stuff, and we've had some discussions on previous hearings about how specialized some of the pieces of election law and election procedure are. And I will just say, from my own experience, I had quite an eye-opening experience last August when I went through the recount regarding my primary election, and actually watching the process of the ballots being processed and counted, and watching everything there. It was quite eye-opening for me, and the majority or vast majority of the public in general is just not aware of that. And so I've had people come up to me talking about election and election-related issues, and I've actually been able to answer quite a number of questions for people, not everything, but just based on my own experience watching my own recount. And so it seems to me that there are a lot of things that look a little strange to somebody from the outside, but you talk to somebody that this is their bread and butter, and they can very easily explain to you how simple a lot of things are and why the certain procedures are in place. And I think that we need to keep that there with Division of Elections to do the initial screening to talk to the people that have the expertise in order to show the public or whoever happens to be making the complaint that, no, this is kind of normal, or, oh, no, you're right, there is something a little strange here, and then passing it along to the Attorney General. So I think maintaining the Division of Elections doing that initial screening is a good step for us.
Senator Hughes, did you still have a comment?
I did, and so I since you're going to be taking amendments Monday, I'm just going to throw this out at the possibility of tabling this so that Deputy Attorney General Mills could get back to us as far as the fiscal impact, because right now we're not adding staff to Division of Elections because they're already doing what they're doing, but we're adding staff to the Department of Law. So now if we're putting a bunch more stuff, it's true that the grand total would be either divided between two agencies, but now if we put it just to one agency, they are, I believe, probably going to need additional staff. So I would either, if we vote on it now, I'd probably be a no because of that, because they still have the avenue to go to the AG. but or we could table it so that we could find out if indeed there would be a fiscal impact.
Before we took, Senator Schauer.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. I just was going to ask the sponsor the same thing. I didn't have a real strong position, but based on that, I would just like a little more input before making a decision because I have a little bit of a concern now just based on that. If he's willing, just wanted to second Senator Hughes' motion.
Love that.
That'd be taken the wrong way. So if he's willing, I would just like to get that data before making a decision because now I'm a little bit concerned. Thank you.
Do we want to give the Ms. Mead from the Alaska court system an opportunity to speak on this while we have it in front of us?
I don't object.
I'm sorry, say again?
I don't object. I don't know if this implicates the court, but feel free, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. All right. Well, then, did you have a comment, Senator Keel?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I'm happy to roll this one and down to the bottom and hold it for our next deliberation. I would just point out as we all chew on it, I don't think there is an appeal from the Division of Elections up to law. I think if you're dissatisfied with a dismissal, you go to court, is the way the underlying bill reads. We can hang on to this and take it up with a little more information and analysis from the agency, so that's fine.
Senator Hughes?
And I would like to get that clarified because I thought the underlying bill, if the Division of Elections determined, no, there's nothing here, there's nothing to investigate, that the person does have the ability to go straight to the AG. So could Deputy Attorney General Corey Mills speak to that, please?
At this time?
Yes.
Ms. Mills, are you listening in? Did you hear the question? Please state your name and begin your answer.
Yes, Chair Holland. Again, Corey Mills, Deputy Attorney General, for the record. I believe we had envisioned it, Senator Hughes, that it, through the chair, that it would be someone could then come to the Attorney General if the division, for example, dismisses a complaint and we were never consulted. I don't see that happening under the current scenario we have, but let's, think about a different division with a different director, maybe. But that someone could then come around and tell the Attorney General, I really think this is a problem, and the Attorney General could still take up an investigation. He's not barred from doing so simply because a complaint was dismissed by the division.
Thank you, Ms. Mills. If there's no other question from the committee, I will withdraw my objection.
And Mr. Chairman.
Senator Keel.
So would you like me to lay this on the table or withdraw it and offer it a later time?
Sounds excellent.
I will withdraw this amendment for consideration at a later time.
All right. So amendment number one is withdrawn. Next up would be amendment number two, also by Senator Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move amendment number two, which has legal number A.7.
And I will object for purposes of discussion. Please explain your amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Amendment A.7 has to do with the potential length of these investigations. When the division was introducing the bill to us on its first hearing, they talked to us about how long some of these can go. And as we discussed it as a committee, there was some concern about how long some of these might be allowed to linger, with the acknowledgement that when you create a complaint process having to do with elections or campaigns, campaigners will do what campaigners do and go after one another. What Amendment A.7 does is it says that if the Attorney General wants to continue an investigation beyond a calendar year, they can go to the Superior Court and get permission to do that. But it prevents a situation where an investigation sits in a file drawer and becomes an attack ad in the next cycle against Representative so-and-so. What are they trying to hide? They've been under investigation for 2 years. So it's a check valve, not unlike the check valves that Amendment Number 5 put in for subpoenas. Gives an opportunity to just have an outside pair of eyeballs say, yep, there's still something to look at here.
Thank you, Senator Keel. Is there another question? Senator Hughes.
And you did object, didn't you?
I did object.
Okay, good. I understand that the sponsor is concerned about candidates using this as a tool, and I think he's probably right that that could happen, and I could picture such a scenario. And I think when the bill was put together, it really wasn't thinking about candidates doing such a thing. So I think the concern is very valid. My concern is a separation of powers issue with the Superior Court telling the AG that he's got to stop his you can only continue if I say so. That's a concern. The other thing is when I think of statute of limitations as far as cases being brought forward, it's in the 5 to 6 year range, and now we're really tightening this up, and I don't believe there's any other area of law where investigations are limited and cut off like that and require permission to continue. I also think about the types of things that candidates usually go after one another on, and lots of times it's financial, so APOC handles that. Sometimes it's residency. Did the person really live in the district? That already by law has to be settled in 30 days. So that narrows the pool of things that are left. And we also run into a problem that there are multiple complaints filed at different times, so similar. And it could be, this one ends, this one filed by person A, we're at the 1 year mark, so you're at your cutoff. But now there's person B who's filed a similar complaint, but it was later, so now we've got another cutoff, and we're kind of still running into that problem. So what I would suggest, and if the sponsor would be open, that instead we consider some kind of language, because I do understand, and I was thinking, I'm not sure how many municipalities have district-wide seats for certain positions. I'm not sure currently the situation in the municipality of Anchorage, but I know at one point their school board seats were district-wide, and there'd be a seat that would come up virtually every April. And so I could see where a person would, he or she maybe lost the election and has an investigation that's open, and they decide they want to run next April for the next seat, and then you're right, it becomes a problem. So my suggestion, instead of what we're suggesting here, is just to have a really clear and simple statement in the legislation, something to the effect that the Attorney General will expedite complaints about candidates and elected officials, so that we're not bumping up into the next election season. And what that would do, that would cause the Department of Law to have to make that a priority. So instead of stretching something out and thinking they have the luxury to allow it to go past the next election cycle, that they're basically saying they've got to put it at the top of the list and get on the move. So that would be my suggestion, and I'm curious whether the sponsor might be open to something like that instead.
Mr. Chairman, just before
he... Senator Schauer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I see both sides of this when I really do. I'm not trying to split the difference here, but I understand why, and I understand the concern. So in the middle, though, of that, if you go too far that direction, you have this concern. If you do what Senator Hughes is saying, the one problem I would see is there's no way to guarantee that he actually does it. It just says expedite, but like always, we can also have, depending on the AG and personality, go, yeah, we expedited it. It took 5 years, but we expedited it. So what does that mean? So is there a way to still provide that safety valve in the language that would accomplish both, something to the effect of, the Attorney General must, I don't know what the right, must file a report or something, saying that it's being prioritized or something where he can't, it's not so nebulous. So there has to be something that is actionable that also is reportable so that it can be seen as the priority of this, as opposed to him just saying that, we're going to do that. So I can kind of see both sides of it. I just wonder if we could, I guess what I'm saying is, can we tweak the language so that it provides that safety valve and it's not just a, because it's like legislative intent. We say it, but they don't necessarily have to do it. So. Thank you.
Can I add to that to that point? I'm just a suggestion for the sponsor to consider, and I don't know what the Department of Law, but if we said something about the AGD will expedite complaints pertaining to candidates, elected officials, in order to complete that investigation prior to the next election, or something like that, where we make it more time certain.
Senator Keel?
Mr. Chairman, I very much appreciate the suggestions, and it's a great discussion. In discussing this with the Department of Law, they were concerned that some legitimate investigations may genuinely take multiple years, and I don't want to cut those off if, in fact, the Department of Law believes there's some there's meat. I don't want to put them in a position where hard deadline, the end, and we miss out on something real. My goal in writing this was to put a relatively low bar that had to be cleared, right? Reasonable probability. I don't recall hearing an objection from the Department of Law to that threshold. But if there's a concern that a year is not enough time, I'm just trying to think. 60 days from certification of election gets you into January, I think. We could make that 16 months gets you, or 17 months gets you the filing deadline, I think. We could certainly push past the one-year mark. Mr. Chairman, maybe the Department of Law has...
I do believe also the Alaska court system has a comment, too. But Ms. Mills, would you please care to make a comment?
Chair Holland and Senator Keel through the chair again. This is Corey Mills, Deputy Attorney General for the Civil Division. We have looked at this, and we've been going back and forth because we do understand the desire. And as Senator Hughes pointed out, in terms of like candidate qualifications, that process already has a time limit and a determination that has to be made by the division. And so I feel like those kind of have their own inherent 30-day time limit. It would really be anything that's not, campaign finance related, not qualifications of a candidate related, some other violation that I guess the candidate is doing that's not directly related to their candidacy, but some other election law that would be encompassed here. I guess our only concern with going to court is then are you flagging for everyone that you're doing an investigation? As we talked about in the subpoena power, one of the reasons we wanted to be able to do kind of ex parte is so that we present to the judge kind of quietly, here's the information we've gathered, because we want to make sure the investigation isn't hindered by people knowing about it. But in this case, you're looking for accountability for the Department of Law while we're in an investigation, and that's just a difficult... I'm just not aware of any other area. Basically, the statute of limitations acts as the bar, right? So you're looking at, you have to bring charges for a criminal case within the statute of limitations, so your investigation has to be done within that time frame. Same applies here. And sorry if I'm rambling. It is just kind of, I hear the discussion. I hear the concern. I think on the department's looking at this, if we could narrow it to the circumstances we're really concerned about, like if we're concerned about candidates, the more we can narrow it down so we're not going every year for every complaint, that would be helpful. Requiring some sort of prioritization, I think we could get on board with that. And then I would just have to think more about how could we do the notification or the accountability piece without hindering our investigation. I think that would be something I really have to put some more thought to for a good solution to that issue. I hope that helps.
Ms. Mills, there's a question from Senator Schauer.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. And Corey, you kind of just answered it at the end there. That's what I was going to ask. There's definitely a reason to consider expediting this, as the sponsor has illuminated. And there's also a concern, of course, And you've also addressed that there, you know, you may have to jump over that hurdle with the court. So the question would be, and as you just suggested, can you give us some language, and it sounds like you're not ready to do that now, that would help bridge the gap here? Because I think there's probably a solution in the language that would allow both of these things to be accomplished, because I do see the need for this, just trying to figure out how to do it in a way that would work. So I guess, Mr. Chairman, I'm formally requesting if they could give us any suggested language they think that might actually work that would accomplish both.
Was there a question there?
Yeah, formal question for her, but I think she kind of asked it, but I'm formally asking if they can give us that to the committee if she'd be willing to do it. Yes, if the sponsor would entertain that as well.
A question from Senator Myers.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm not sure if this question is going to go to the sponsor or to Ms. Mills, but it seems that a large part of the consternation in here, at least as far as the separation of powers issues goes, is the fact that we're asking the Superior Court to oversee it. My question is there another body that would be able to provide the same type of oversight that might actually be within the executive branch so that we eliminate the separation of powers issues?
Ms. Mills? Oh, we have Senator Keel stepping up.
Ms. Chairman, I appreciate that question. When the mention of separation of powers came up, I'm a little hesitant because I do think the checks and balances are important here, and I don't know, maybe I just don't trust the government as much as you Republicans. I couldn't resist, Mr. Chairman. I had to do it. Mr. Chairman, I wonder, I'll throw this, if you're willing, Mr. Chair, to the Department of Law. What about the Office of Administrative Hearings? They're at least in a different department and quasi-independent.
Also, do we want to let Nancy Mead with the Alaska Court System provide input on this?
At your discretion, Mr. Chairman.
Ms. Mead, do you have any comments?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Nancy Mead from the Alaska Court System. And I, in reviewing this amendment, I have some of the same concerns that you all are expressing. And in particular, it would be very unusual for a Superior Court judge to tell an investigator within the executive branch of government to stop doing their investigation or to, on the contrary, to please continue their investigation. It does put the court in a position of supervising an activity that's wholly within the executive branch. Again, the court can and will do it if the statute says to do so, but I'm not aware of any other area of law where the court would make a ruling short of a court case being filed telling the executive branch employees how to proceed with their work. But you guys are already aware of that, and perhaps a workaround is possible.
Thank you, Ms. Mead. So I've been asked to revisit Corey Mills, or actually Senator Shower's question. That's why I asked what was the exact question. You kind of lost me in that. I believe it was, would the Department of Law be willing to provide verbiage? And could you restate your question?
You got it, Mr. Chair. So the formal request, if the sponsor would allow, is acceptable to wait, is would the Department of Law provide us language that would bridge the gap between being able to have the safety valve that the Senator Keel suggests, that I think we all agree we would like to have so it's not a political weapon, but also would set the bar such that we could achieve it without causing the concerns that everybody here is illuminating. I think the best person or agency place to do that would be them, because they're going to be the ones that are under this. So I'd like to see if they could input language that would work.
Ms. Mills?
Again, Corey Mills, Deputy Attorney General. Senator Shower, through the chair, Yes, if we could take this, and I know we've been kind of noodling it around the last few days because Senator Keel was very helpful in sharing a lot of these with us, and we have been throwing things around. So let me come back together with our team and see if we can come up with something that would work. I think in terms of a less objectionable or problematic process, I think keeping it within the executive branch somehow, making it so that it could be a confidential process so that we don't hint anyone off as to what's going on. I think those are all positive directions. And also, if we're really talking about candidates and wanting to expedite those issues, you know, that might be another way to focus it too. So, yes, let us think about this and maybe come back with some language that we think at least would be workable for us.
And I'll apologize. I believe the confusion here is we have the two issues going on. We kind of have two separate issues, the separation of powers issue and the other issue. And so the other question for Corey Mills would be, is there an alternate body? Senator Myers, please restate your question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Mills, my question is, if I understand the intent of the amendment here, and I kind of agree with it in principle, but my question is, since we have the separation of powers issues, if there is a body within the executive branch that could provide a similar type of oversight rather than going to the superior court to get permission to continue with the investigation past the deadline.
And through the chair, Senator Myers, again, Corey Mills, for the record, that's definitely something we can consider. I think the, you know, idea that came to mind, the Office of Administrative Hearings, that's definitely one approach. We have other boards and commissions, but I don't think they're, you know, exactly on point for this. But yes, we can take that under consideration as well. I do think keeping it, like I said, within the executive branch and outside of a superior court docket, you know, with some confidentiality protections would be a better way to go if that's what we need to do. The only other point I would reiterate is we may get complaints. We may get multiple complaints. So then you end up with, like, the first complaint filed, and we may not see a whole lot there, but then another complaint comes in on a similar subject. So what is the year deadline? At what point are we supposed to go back, and do we have to go back for every single one that was filed, or if the Attorney General starts an investigation? It can sometimes be hard to determine, okay, here's the absolute start of this investigation and here's the absolute conclusion, unless, you know, once we go to court. So those are just other issues that I'm trying to think through as we're talking.
Senator Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Briefly on that last point, the amendment, the underlying bill, don't try and write every single possible scenario into the statute. There remains discretion in the underlying bill, even with this amendment, for the Department of Law. I appreciate Senator Schauer's observation about, you know, needing to have at least enough specificity to mean something. But if I believe under the underlying language, the Department of Law has the authority to consolidate complaints. It's crystal clear they have the ability to initiate their own complaints. Some limited check is the goal. So having heard the conversation and having appreciated very much the Department of Law's willingness to come back and try and find some language that's going to work for all these concerns, I wonder if I can do it again, Mr. Chairman, and withdraw this amendment with the opportunity to reoffer at a later meeting.
I will remove my objection, and you would care to withdraw your amendment?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Amendment 3 is withdrawn. And just a reminder, we will set a deadline, I believe, of 11. Was it? I'm sorry. I'm looking at Amendment 3 in front of me already. Amendment 2 is withdrawn. Thank you so much. All right. Now we're on to Amendment number 3. And Amendment number 3 is by Senator Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move Amendment 3, A.4.
Amendment 3, A.4, I will object. Senator Keel, please explain your amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Amendment number 3, changes are made to a shall when it comes to the Attorney General's office notifying the Division of Elections when the thing is done. And this simply gets to some of our conversations about the public being able to know, or a candidate or an individual being able to know when their name is cleared. Obviously, if there's an investigation that leads to law enforcement, we're not worried about this. If there's an investigation that leads to a new series of regulations and other actions or actions against state employee, we're not worried about this. Because all that's going to come out. However, when the Department of Law looks at something and says, nope, there's just no there, this would say you need to let the Division of Elections know that. And so the person complained about has the opportunity to say, okay, my name is clear.
Is there any question or comment from the committee? Seeing none, I will give Ms. Mills. Did you have a comment on this?
So again, Corey Mills for the record, Deputy Attorney General. Chair Holland, you know, the reason we originally made it a May is mainly because we just felt like it could be burdensome and we'd have to be writing reports on everything. If a report could just be a line saying, you know, no evidence was found or, you know, this was not substantiated, maybe that wouldn't be too burdensome. But if we have to create some sort of, you know, lengthier report on everything, I think that would be our only concern here.
Thank you, Ms. Mills and Senator Myers.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Mills, a question for you is, what if we inserted the shall, but we gave a caveat and said, unless the complaint has been deemed to be frivolous, would that be acceptable?
So through the chair, Senator Meyer, again, Corey Mills for the record. You know, I think a frivolous complaint will have already been dismissed, at least under the language as we have it, because it would have been dismissed by the division. So I'm not sure that gets us anywhere, but maybe I'm not understanding your question.
Senator Hughes?
I actually like that it would be written so that there's a record, and I'm just wondering if Deputy Attorney General Mills, if clarifying what the how we would define report, so it would make it clear that a lengthy, you know, 40-page document detailing all the investigation isn't necessary, but maybe just the conclusion or something like that. I'm not sure. Just so we're not adding a tremendous workload, but that there is some written documentation. Could we put language about what the report should entail or something like that?
Senator Hughes, Mr. Chair, may I add to that question with Corey?
Shower.
Corey, I hear what Senator Hughes saying. I agree, but I guess the way I see this, there's no – we just give you the language here, and this is policy-driven. It's regulation or policy, which you enact. So – The way I read this is you could do whatever you want from a report. You could make it a one-liner if you so chose. We're not directing that here. So, I mean, in the answer to Senator Hughes' question, I believe you're the one that would make that policy, unless I'm mistaken. So unless there'd be specific language codified from us, I think it's your purview, correct, to do so?
So through the chair, Senators Schauer and Hughes, again, Corey Mills for the record, I have to tell you that my concern, I generally agree with you, and I think having this discussion on the record is helpful for legislative history, but it's amazing what people will sue over. And so if we provide a letter or, you know, a one-page, one-sentence comment? Is someone going to say, well, that's not really a report, and you need to provide us a report with, you know, X and Y details? I'm not that concerned about what your intent is or us being able to carry that out. I'm concerned that anything can be sued over, and so we're in court arguing over what a report is.
Follow-up from Senator Schauer.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. And, Corey, I hear you loud and clear, but I guess my point back to that is the what you write would be up to you. We're not directing that. If you were to get sued, you could certainly turn around and write a bigger report. That might happen. But my guess is that most of the time, as Senator Kiel, the intent is something that just says, hey, I'm clear, I'm good, is what most people are just going to want. And I could be wrong. And so if there's more data to support what you're saying that would happen more often, I guess I could hear that. But my guess is most people just want to know, hey, I'm good, and it's a very simple thing. So that's kind of my follow-up question. Thanks, Mr. Chair.
And I just say, I think if someone's looking for a lawsuit based on a pending decision on in that case, they'd probably be suing anyway if there was no report out. Senator Schauer. Senator Hughes.
Yeah. So, of course, if the person wants to just see that their name clear and it's the one liner, they're going to be happy. But if they're not cleared, then they might want to see more. And so, again, I would ask Deputy Attorney General Mills whether, since, like you said, that there could be lawsuits. So even though, yes, Senator Schauer said you can determine what the report is, should that be actually in the statute so that you would have a standing as far as somebody trying to sue you, that if we were to put what the report should contain and make it pretty simple to, you know, as long as you meet these criteria in the report, you're good to go? And would you be open to coming up with language to do so?
Ms. Mills?
So, Corey Mills again for the record, through the chair, Senator Hughes. You know, in thinking about this, I think report unfortunately infers something bigger usually. One thing we might be amenable to is could we change report to notice? And that way, you know, when the details are needed, because if any details are needed for the division to make a decision, that would need to be included and sent to the division, and that's then public under the statute. If we have to file a court action, you know, the information supporting that court action would be public. So in this case, if what we're looking for is just making sure people know there's an end and they can clear their name, I think the word notice infers something short and you're just giving notice of our findings. So that might be one way to avoid getting into any sort of discussion about, you know, do you need a longer report or not?
Thank you, Ms. Mills. Senator Hughes.
So what I might ask the sponsor, can we take an at ease? I'm sorry.
Brief at ease. Senate Judiciary Committee, back on the record. Senator Hughes?
So, yes, thank you. I'm just wondering if the sponsor might be open, if we have the shell, that it would be a notice of findings. And we could either conceptually adopt that, or since we're doing amendments on Monday, this, you know, the sponsor might want to withdraw it and come back with notice of findings as part of the amendment, if he's open to that.
Senator Keel?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think if the department wants to specify what its report or notice of findings or whatever should say in the department's bill, I would welcome an amendment from the department. I might even run it. whatever the department wants to put in the department's bill for the department's report probably doesn't need to be in this amendment, which simply says they need to say when the damn thing is done.
Senator Hughes.
Well, my concern is if we pass it right now the way it is, now we're saying this big report. We're saying they shall provide a written report. So I would prefer, because the workload, and we don't know what this is going to trigger as far as the volume, and it needs to be reasonable. So I would tend to, I want to support the shell because I want something written, but I think it does need we need to have it in combination, because if I'm voting it for right now, I'm saying they shall write a big, long report every time, and I don't think they should.
Mr. Chairman, I'm perfectly happy to respond to an amendment to the amendment that tries to define report or change report to something else. I'm also perfectly fine to talk about what that report or needs to look like, or change the report to something else in another amendment. Either is fine.
Senator Hughes.
So I'll move a conceptual amendment to amendment number 3, which is A.4, that on line 30 on page 2, to delete report of the investigation and insert notice of findings.
I will object for discussion.
Well, I think we kind of had the discussion.
Yeah, I think we have. I will withdraw my objection. Is there an objection on the committee to that conceptual amendment for replacing the word report of the investigation with a, repeat that, was it a notice of findings?
Can we read the whole sentence, Mr. Chair, just so I can hear it straight through?
So I can read it. Let's see. Where
and
are
you
we?
Want to include shall instead of, I mean, ultimately you get the idea of the way the sentence is going to be.
Yeah,
going.
Starting on line 28, the conclusion of an investigation under the section, the Attorney General shall inform the division of the result of the investigation and shall submit to the division a notice of its of finding, or however the drafters would need to do that to make it conforming to legal language.
A notice of the findings. Is there an objection? Seeing none, the conceptual amendment passes. With the this discussion having, I think, run its course, I will remove my objection to amendment number 3. Is there any further objection to amendment number 3?
As amended.
Say again?
Amendment 3 is amended.
Number 3 is amended. All right, so now we're on to amendment. Brief at ease. Back in the record, I'll apologize. I wear hearing aids, and sometimes soft-spoken men. So number 3, as amended, is adopted. Thank you very much. Speak loudly. All right, on to amendment number 4 by Senator Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In your packets, you will see amendment 4 is a handwritten change. So I suppose I should call this conceptual amendment 4 just because it has that. I move conceptual amendment 4, which is A.9, with a handwritten change.
All right, I will object to amendment number 4, A.9, with a handwritten change. For discussion.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This actually jibes nicely with Senator Hughes's fix to the previous amendment. What A.9 will do here is that once the report is submitted to the Division of Elections, this would make the records of the investigation public. Usual Public Records Act rules would apply. Nobody's, home phone number gets released or Social Security number, any of that. And what the handwritten change does, by the way, is there's a section in this amendment, A.9, that makes sure intelligence information is protected. So intelligence information, anything they're going to send to the state troopers, anything they got from the FBI, that sort of thing, whether they got it through a subpoena or whether they got it some other way, that's not released. That's what that handwritten change makes sure applies to all the intelligence information. It is not released. But the baseline information in a concluded investigation becomes a public record. That's just in the public interest. We should get to see the public records, the records generated by our government. And again, it's part of an individual's ability to see what the government did when it involved their name. Of course, as a baseline, if it does go off to the state troopers, if there's a crime found, well, Public Records Act says that's in the criminal arena. You're not going to get anything out of a Public Records Act request here. So just the stuff that ought to be public, Mr. Chairman.
Is there, Senator Hughes?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. So good with the records being available. So, but I'm wondering, based on our prior adoption of the conceptual to the amendment number 3 on this amendment number 4, line 3, do we now need to change the words report of an investigation to notice of the findings? That's my question. So now those will line up. So I guess I would offer a friendly conceptual amendment to amendment number 4, but I'd like to hear the sponsor before I make that official move.
I would also add, we might want to just add the words or notice of findings to cover either case, but I'll let Senator Keel speak to his amendment.
Sure, I was glancing at my notes. Senator, can you point again to the page and line, please?
Line 3?
Yeah, line 3 of amendment number 4. Now we've told the AG he's to submit a notice of the findings to the division. So the question would be, do we need a friendly conceptual amendment to delete the word report of an investigation and change it to notice of the findings?
Mr. Chairman, we do. Yes, please.
I'm sorry, say again?
Yes, please. We do need that.
Okay. All right. So a conceptual amendment?
Yeah, so I move a conceptual amendment to amendment number 4, which is A.9, and is on line 3, to delete the words report of an investigation and insert the words notice of the findings.
Okay. So conceptual amendment. Senator Keel?
I think report appears in 3 places. If you would do that in all 3 places where report appears in this amendment.
And I'll add to that motion, if I may, Mr. Chair.
Please
that anywhere the report of an investigation is in this section, we would change that to notice of the findings.
Do you want a quick review of the writing?
Mr. Chairman, if we also get that on the record, just technical conforming changes, that way the alleged legal drafters will know that that's what they need to do.
Thank you, Senator Schauer.
Do you object?
I don't object for, once again, we spoke in the second, object for discussion. Is there any further discussion on this conceptual amendment to replace report of investigation anywhere it appears on amendment number 4 with the words notice of findings? Any other discussion? Seeing none, I withdraw that objection. And so amendment number 4's conceptual amendment is adopted. And now the amendment number 4 as amended is before us. Senator Hughes.
Another friendly conceptual amendment, and it's not.
I should have gone to you first. Senator Hughes.
So it's not really material. It's just an organization thing. It seems to me like E and F should be flipped as far as the order of how things proceed for ease of anyone reading and understanding the law. So first you have to have the information submitted to the division, and then it becomes available for the public. The records become available, if that makes sense. It's kind of backwards, upside down, but it still works. It doesn't change what happens. It's just the order. First you give the information to the division, and then it becomes available if the public wishes to seek the information.
Senator Keel.
Mr. Chairman, you can tell I am not the one with a degree in rhetoric at this table. I have no objection to the organizational change. As the senator says, it does the same thing.
Senator Hughes.
I'll move the second conceptual amendment to amendment number 4A.9 to, let's see, how do we do this? To
reverse paragraphs.
Reverse the order, the order of the paragraphs E and F. So F will become E and E will become F.
Is there any objection? Seeing none, conceptual amendment number 2, reversing the order of E and F on amendment number 4, is passed. Senator Myers.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a question for the sponsor. I'm looking at the drafting here, and if I'm understanding this correctly, we are deleting all the changes that we just made in amendment number 3 because we're deleting that paragraph and then inserting something completely different. And I'm just trying to understand. I would understand one thing if we're adding an extra paragraph or two in, but we're deleting two paragraphs and then adding two paragraphs, and it just makes me wonder when we first amend a paragraph and now we're going to delete it.
I believe we still have one more activity in front of the committee. I am probably going to maintain my objection at this point. We'll probably push this to a vote unless you care to withdraw it, because it's gotten a little complex, and I think we could revisit this on Monday when we had more time to look at it, because I believe Senator Myers has probably a fair concern right there.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. One of the joys of having a professional legal services staff is that they go through these proceedings with a fine-tooth comb and the great work of our recording secretary and your staff and make it all work. I'm not concerned that we will be undoing the work we did. Amendment 4, as noted, is conceptual. So I think it works.
Senator Hughes.
Yes, and if you actually look, if we're going to make these things available to the public, you do, in the actual, go back to the bill itself on page 3, you have to get rid of the end of that paragraph, because that's saying things are confidential. And so that's what this does, if we're making them available, unless they're, of course, criminal. Is that my correct, that's why we, what we're doing here? So on page 3 of the bill, starting on line 2 with the word investigation, that's where things are going to remain confidential, because that's now missing in your amendment.
Mr. Chairman, at the risk of pulling a majority leader, may I have my staff come up and help with that?
Senator Keel, certainly. Please have your staff come up to the table and introduce themselves, place themselves on the record, and offer any comments.
For the record, this is Kathy Schlingheide, staff to Senator Keel. Mr. Chair, in answer to Senator Hughes' question, yes, it deletes the language about the records being confidential and instead says that they're subject to the usual rules of the Public Records Act. And your conceptual amendment number 1 erase the contradiction with the work done in Amendment 3. So now they should work in concert with each other.
Any further comments from the committee? I believe that has resolved my concern.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
I will withdraw my objection. Is there any other comment from the committee?
If I may, Mr. Chair, I don't believe we've heard yet from Ms. Mills on this amendment, and I'd like to hear her opinion.
Ms. Mills, do you have some input on this on amendment number 4 as amended?
So, Chair Holland, for the record again, Corey Mills, Deputy Attorney General. I think I followed the discussion and understand where conceptual amendment number 4 stands now. I guess the only clarification for the committee is, and I think Senator Keel got to this, intelligence information, the way the Department of Law has historically viewed that, like in the consumer protection arena and other places, is basically that is what is gathered in the investigation. So intelligence information is that information that is gathered in the course of the investigation. So, the record of the investigation is actually a pretty narrow category, I think, of at least what we would view of documents. Under the Consumer Protection Act, which is where this language came from, of course, both of those items, intelligence information and record of investigation, are confidential and not subject to the Public Records Act. And so it's always been kind of a bundle, right? Record of investigation, intelligence information. But I just wanted the committee to know that the record of the investigation is likely a lot narrower than what we would view as the intelligence information, which is anything collected in the investigation that may end up, you know, ultimately leading to either a violation or referred to law enforcement at some point.
Is there any other question or comment from the committee? Senator Hughes.
So just to make sure, Deputy AG, so you're fine with on page 3 of the bill, starting with the word investigation on line 2, that the rest of that section, that paragraph not being there because it is already kind of understood that that remains confidential and a record being made available would include anything that would cross that line. Is that correct?
So through the chair, Senator Hughes, I mean, I think our preference continues to be to treat it like consumer protection investigations and not make this distinction between intelligence information and the record of investigation, that all of it is protected. But, you know, I hear where the committee is going and just wanted to make that point of clarification. But I think our preference would still be to keep it at the language that we had. The way I read the amendment is that now, like I said, you'd have these two buckets. You'd have the record of the investigation. That would be treated under the normal Public Records Act process. We'd have to do our review. You know, we'd have to determine what was privileged, what wasn't, what falls under the various exceptions. And then for the intelligence information, which, like I said, is pretty much what we gather in the investigation and through those investigative tools and working with law enforcement, that those would not be subject to the Public Records Act, so we wouldn't have to do that same review for those documents. That's how I view this this working.
Senator Hughes.
So to take care of that, if we started on page 3, line 2, and put back in, and we do have Monday to do this kind of work, so I just want to hear from the Deputy AG. If we started on line 2 and put back, starting with the word intelligence, would that accomplish your goal? Because that's the second bucket.
So, Senator Hughes, through the chair, I actually think if we're going to go into these two buckets, I actually prefer the language in Senator Keel's amendment that it is not a public record. That actually makes it easier for us than saying it's confidential, because we always have questions. And I know that's the way it was originally written, but we had actually looked at making that change as well, wanting to say that it's not subject to the Public Records Act instead of saying it's confidential, because then it's really clear what lines are being drawn. So in other words, if we want to go with this distinction, I think the language in Senator Keel's amendment is more appropriate.
Okay, great. Thank you.
All right. Is there any further discussion on Amendment Number 4 as amended? Seeing none, Amendment Number 4 as amended is adopted. All right. At this time, my plan is to take public testimony on SB 82 during Monday's hearing and finish taking any further amendments with the intent to move the bill if that is the will of the committee. At this point, we'll set SB 82 aside. Next up is Senate Joint Resolution 4 relating to abortion funding. SJR 4 was previously heard on April 16th and included public testimony. An amendment deadline was previously set for April 21st. I received no amendments. Do members have any amendments at this time? Seeing none.
I have a comment.
Senator Hughes, do you have further remarks?
Yeah, I just want to get something on the record, and it could result in a very simple amendment if the committee wish. I don't have any preference either way, because this amendment uses the word may, and I do have our alleged legal drafter should be on the phone, and his name is Andrew, and I forget his last name. Go to the next tab.
Oh, sorry.
Because we have the amendment, the way the draft handbook directs the drafters, my understanding is if something is in the affirmative and has a subject doing something, it says so-and-so shall do this or that. If it's in the negative, it's typically the instead of shall not, the words may not are used. So in this case, may not is the same as cannot. And so it's very firm as with the word may. However, there are some other states that have taken and changed that may to shall. Louisiana is one that changed it to shall. On the other hand, Alabama has it like we have may not. The Tennessee doesn't use may or shall. They just says it says nothing in this Constitution secures or protects, et cetera. It's really to get on the record that may not is not leaving a crack open in the door. It's the same as cannot. It's grammatically, it's a little questionable. I think it's like fingernails on the chalkboard to drafters when you don't follow the handbook. If we could have Andrew Dunmire come on the record and explain the when you have a negative with a may, it's the same as cannot.
I see Mr. Dunmire, you may be listening. If you are, please state your name, put yourself on the record, and begin any testimony.
Yes, Chair Holland, this is Andrew Dunmire, an attorney at Ledge Legal. What Senator Hughes was saying is correct. The drafting manual, page 65, instructs that we should use the word shall to impose a duty upon somebody, whereas the words may not are used to impose a prohibition upon someone. I will note that the state constitution, is not, maybe not as consistent as current bills that are drafted are. For example, Article 1, Section 20 says no member of the armed forces shall, in times of peace, be quartered in any house. But more recent provisions do conform to the current drafting style. So, for example, Article 1, Section 25, which is now unconstitutional under Obergefell, says that to be valid or recognized in the state, a marriage may exist only between one man and one woman. So the modern style, the current style, is to use may not to express a prohibition, whereas it's to use shall to instruct somebody or an agency has a duty to perform an act.
Senator Hughes?
So I wanted to get that on the record so it's clear, and when this is considered in the future, that there is no open crack in the door. However, if there's anyone uncomfortable, we can conceptually change that word may to shall before we move it out of committee, but like I said, I don't have a preference either way because I think it's firm the way it is.
Is there any other question or comment from the committee? Seeing none, I don't believe we're going to address that at this point. What is the will of the committee?
No objections. No objections. No objections. Everything's
a brief at ease. Back in the record, sorry for that confusion. So what is the will of the committee?
Mr. Chairman, I move that Senate Joint Resolution 4, Work Order 32-LS0246-4-alpha be reported from the Senate Judiciary Committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal note.
Is there any objection?
I object, Mr. Chair.
Senator Keel, would you like to speak to your objection?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My objection goes directly to the heart of the proposed constitutional amendment to remove some of Alaska women's rights. I don't think there's any situation in which I could be okay with putting that in our Constitution. We've heard a lot of debate and discussion on this proposed constitutional amendment and presentations from folks who have tried to frame this as somehow asserting the legislature's right to lawmaking. But the simple fact is that the courts, as is their duty and their requirement under our Constitution, have stopped the legislature from violating the Constitution when they have overturned the restrictions on abortions that the legislature has tried to enact. The simple fact is that women have these rights. A woman has rights to decide when or whether she wants to become a parent, because she is a full-fledged human being with full-fledged rights under Alaska's Constitution. Even if she's a young woman, even if she's a poor woman, she still has those rights. And those come in under our right to privacy, which, thank goodness, is a lot stronger than the and more explicit than the right to privacy contained in the U.S. Constitution. And the courts have said that the government doesn't get to violate that woman's rights to privacy, even if she's young, even if she's poor, and she has a right to equality. And the only way that the government can get in between her and her doctor, in between her and her religious leader, if she has one, in between her and her decision when or whether to become a parent, is if we take some of her rights away. And that ultimately is the effect that this amendment would have if placed in our Constitution. So I have to object to its moving from committee.
Is Senator Hughes.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair, for your willingness to move this out of committee. And just in response to my colleague and friend, Senator Keel, I have to remind members and those listening that the little baby girls who are future women have rights that are inside the womb. This is a human life. We're not talking about a growth or a tumor. We're talking an actual baby. And although this constitutional amendment is not setting any such policy, it's to help us as we move forward determine the policy we want to set. I personally believe that taking the life of a baby via abortion is murder. It is taking the life of another human. And so I appreciate this conversation. I think it's time for Alaska to be able to have a conversation on this and set the policy that reflects the values of Alaskans. And so with that, again, I appreciate the members moving this amendment out of the judiciary today.
Is there any further debate? Seeing none, Senator Keel, do you wish to maintain your objection?
I do, Mr. Chairman.
Madam Secretary, please call the roll.
Yes.
Senator Hughes. Yes.
Senator Myers.
Yes.
Senator Keel.
No.
Senator Holland.
Yes.
4 yeas, 4 nays.
With a vote of 4-1, Senator Resolution 4, Version A, has advanced from the Senate Judiciary Committee. And we will go ahead and wrap the meeting up. I plan to roll Senate Bill 122 to Monday's calendar. And is there any other business before the committee? Seeing none, we will finish our paperwork after we adjourn. Our next meeting is Monday, April 26 at 1:30 p.m. And we are adjourned at 3:00.